Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable and our panel discussion this morning. We are thrilled to have you as a part of our program. It is 15 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock on this Thursday, the 24th of June. Where has the year gone? My goodness. If only last year went this quickly. good morning. Welcome. It's very nice to have you all, and we thank you so much for being with us. I have just one quick thing to mention to remind you how you can be part of the program, and then I'll introduce everybody and we can get started. Panel at WAMC.org is how to do it. Panel at WAMC.org. We got a lot of letters, so we can't guarantee you that we'll read yours, but we can guarantee you that we will get to as many as we can in the time that we have allotted. We welcome you. Panel at WAMC.org. Let me introduce the group to you this morning, and then we will get started post-haste. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm here. I'm fine. I'm happy, happy, happy.
Excellent. Excellent. See that skipping a step? That's good. Also equally happy, Terry Gibson joins us. He is a lecturer and adjunct professor in communications for SUNY New Paltz and RPI. He is also a former state senator. We are thrilled when he joins us. Good morning.
Good morning, Joe. I'm happy too.
Yeah, good, good. All right. Don't get too happy on me, but that's all right.
Okay.
Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association, Judy Patrick, joins us. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning. We just finished taping the Media Project, and it's a good one this Sunday.
It's good.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they're all winners, but this one, good.
This one especially good.
That's good.
Well, you're on it, so therefore it must be excellent.
Well, Alan was in fine form.
Oh, well, good. He's always in fine form.
Well, all I did was mention that Judy has taken to wearing her glasses at the end of her nose. And I said, you're reminding me more and more of Chuck Schumer. So,
well, they're not. They're readers, right?
They're readers, and they're on top of my head right now. And well, he also called me an old editor. He called us all old editors.
Oh, well,
no, they were. They're all old editors, and they all said, when I was an editor, here's what they would say. When I was an editor, I used to believe thus and so. But now that I'm not an editor anymore,
I've changed my mind.
I don't believe that anymore.
You're in so much trouble already, you don't even know.
Well, as a talk show host, I've just noticed that both you and Mike Spain, when you become
ex-editors,
former editors, older editors, if you will, you're a lot more fun on the radio. Vera Carias-Kelly joins us. She is Siena College Professor of Comparative Politics. Good morning, Vera. How are you?
Good morning. And as always, I'm super.
Good. It's really good to see you. Let's see. Well, we'll talk about the news that broke overnight, and it's tragic, and it's sort of what everyone is looking at right now. It is happening in Surfside, Florida, where a massive search and rescue mission is underway this morning at the site of a 12-story building with more than 80 units from Miami-Dade Fire Rescue responding. It's hard to imagine how this could happen, the mayor said. Buildings just don't fall down. Well, this one did, and one person is confirmed dead, at least 10 hurt in this collapse of a Florida condo building. Lots of questions going on about what happened, when it happened, and why it happened. But the pictures are quite frightening. And there's some 130 units, we believe, condo. Thank you. And the mayor said that in addition to at least one death, dozens of residents have been displaced. He added that 50 hotel rooms located next door to the residential building were also evacuated. And the mayor says that they think at least 15 people need temporary housing. But, of course, the big question, because the mayor said it is a catastrophic failure of the building. It looks like a bomb went off. It's hard to imagine how this could happen. Again, buildings just don't fall down. So there are people trying to find their family members, and we look at these pictures, and you just – and the next story and the first story I was going to bring up today was infrastructure, and you think of how all of this is connected, interestingly. Mm-hmm. Alan.
Well, yeah, you don't know. Roselle and I were privileged to stay – in that area, due to somebody's really nice lending us an apartment years ago. And I keep thinking that could have been us, and it could have been anybody. And that is why, you know, just when you think you're safe, and you see buildings going down in other countries, and you see bombings, and this is different. This is right here, and a lot of people are familiar with it. There's a certain je ne sais quoi about why the building came down. Nobody's saying bombs. The mayor is saying it looked like a bomb had hit it.
Which is
different than we're thinking there may have been a bomb.
Yeah, I don't think that's what the report. They don't, but
when you look at it, it is very similar to the pictures of when a building has been imploded and it goes down. Those pictures look similar, but no one is saying that a bomb went off.
So I think what they're probably going to investigate is building codes, code enforcement, rebar usage, contractors. I'm suspecting there's going to be some, infrastructure-related questions about who gave authorization for certain kinds of construction materials and so on. I feel like Judy has something to say. She's looking at
this is a very difficult story to cover, especially in the early hours. There are so many things we don't know, and that they want the answers to, and they want the answers to so quickly. And one of the things the media can do at this point is not to speculate too much, to ask the questions, but also to focus on the victims, and the families, and describe what happened. But it's going to be hours before we get any real information out of them. We just need to be patient. This America, or our society in general, wants information. They want the facts now. And there are times like this when you can't get the facts right now.
And you don't have that problem as much in newspapers, but you certainly do on cable news, where people are just trying to, well, let's face it, kill time, fill time.
Mm-hmm. Or speculate.
And then they're left to speculate as to what happened. So if you're an editor, you're sitting in not an old editor, but a very young editor, and you're sitting in your Schenectady office, and you see this, and do you say, oh, let's do a story on building safety?
No, you wait.
Okay, but let's say it is. We find that it is building safety, what Vera said about code enforcement and so forth.
It depends on what kind of building code problem there was, because if it's something that could transplant up to upstate New York, certainly you could do a story about it. If I'm in a local newspaper, I'm saying, did anybody from here,
right,
any relatives down there? Mm-hmm. You want to get the human part of that story in as quickly as possible.
Terry, you're watching the pictures.
Well, I'm just looking at the pictures like everyone else, trying to figure it out, and there's just so many unanswered questions. It does look like a bomb went off. It's hard to imagine what could cause that kind of catastrophe, where all these floors just collapse as if they were built on straw or something. So, who knows? Who knows? I just think that
it wasn't an old building. It was built in 1980 or 81.
That sounds like yesterday to me, anyway.
Yeah, no, that's not.
But these are the kinds of things, we might find unusual in the United States, but these things do happen in many other countries, and we watch it and we say, of course, this can happen here and there. But the interesting thing is, it can happen here in the United States, and it does happen.
Well, I don't want to do what Judy was just saying of speculating, but one of the things that you could ask for is, well, how many storms has this building withstood? How many... how many, what other outside damage is this? Yes, yeah. 1980 isn't that old. We do have a letter, we have a couple letters from people who have said that in the early reporting, that there were reports a couple days ago of heavy machinery on the roof, and also wondering about if that was a cause as well.
And,
so,
those were reportedly the cause on the bridge collapse in Minnesota, if you remember. A few years ago, my brother-in-law drove over that bridge about half hour before it collapsed, and he reported seeing heavy equipment on it, and he felt it was already sort of possibly leaning a little bit, and he just thought that was his imagination, but then the bridge collapsed shortly thereafter. So that is certainly an issue to ask questions about, right?
So let us then move on to the subject of infrastructure, which this brings us to. A bipartisan group of senators tentatively reached an agreement with White House officials Wednesday on hundreds of billions of dollars in new spending for the nation's infrastructure system, giving a significant boost to one of President Biden's biggest domestic policy ambitions. Multiple senators leaving an evening negotiating session at the Capitol said the group, which included 5 Democrats, 5 Republicans, and top White House officials, had reached a framework for a deal. They said senators would go to the White House on Thursday to brief President Biden on the details. There's a framework of agreement on a bipartisan package, according to Senator Susan Collins. As she left the meeting, there's still details to be worked out. Senators declined to disclose those details of their agreement, but stressed that the group had agreed not just on the spending levels for various infrastructure projects, but also on how to pay for the package.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. You know, you pay for the package. You're not allowed under this format, apparently, to raise taxes. But what you are able to do is to tell the IRS, go and collect everything you should have been collecting all along. And that would be, you know, a part of it. The other question I have is, what's Donald Trump doing right now and his agents? Are they calling all Republicans? You got 5 Republicans here. Are they calling him and say, you better not? Because the one thing a guy who wants to run for president again, and he does, he keeps saying so, and you got to believe him, is not to give any victories to Biden. And no question in my mind, this is a victory for Biden. It may not be what he asked for, and I don't think he ever meant to ask for all the money that he asked for in the beginning. Because I don't think he thought he could get it, but he thought that the art of compromise, this guy who had been in the Senate for 1,000 years, thought that this was the way to do it. And now it may turn out to be right. But that's only 5 Republicans, and you need 10 in order to make this work.
Well, in the 5 Republicans, we should note Susan Collins, Bill Cassidy, Lisa Murkowski, Rob Portman, and Mitt Romney.
Yeah, so it's the usual group that always is there when there seems to be some effort to do something in a bipartisan fashion. I'm not feeling a real sense of joy here. It feels like we still have a long way to go. I mean, unless they have 10 Republicans on board, then it doesn't really matter. And the fact that they're going to go brief the president on this, I'm not really sure what that's going to achieve, because who they really need to be briefing is apparently the person running the show, which is Mitch McConnell. You know, is he going to go for it? Is he going to allow
the
his members to
vote? Well, the
answer is absolutely not. And if that's not going to, and then of course there is the House of Representatives. They also have to sign off on this. Mm-hmm. So there's a long way to go before anything is resolved. And I should point out that the clock is ticking. You know, it's not like we have forever to make these decisions. There is only so much time left in this legislative session in D.C. And I think one strategy the Republicans are relying on heavily is, let's just run out the clock. I mean, look how long it's taking to maybe get an infrastructure bill passed. We still have lots and lots of other things to address, too, that we're just running out of time on.
Judy?
I may be way off on this, but I think this is a victory for the Republicans. They got the bricks and mortar infrastructure bill they wanted. They got that nobody's touching the Trump tax reductions that were passed during the Trump administration. And they essentially have gutted the Biden's proposed infrastructure bill of child care, of climate change proposals. I think McConnell has gone on record as saying, you know, he supports bricks and mortar infrastructure, and I think that the revenue portion of it, he's going to go along with it.
Is he willing to go to get another 5 senators on board?
I think
mm-hmm.
It would be political suicide for them not to do it.
I agree.
Vera, we have
less
than
a
minute, but go ahead.
Yeah, there's a spin operation underway here, because to call something a great step forward that we just described as a framework is a little, you know, it's galloping ahead. We don't really have much to discuss in detail.
It's the great American novel. Here's the outline.
Yes. And any editor would say, okay, fill in the details, I think. Maybe a little plotting might be useful. So we'll see. We'll see if we actually find something slightly usable in there in this announcement tonight, whether Biden is on board with a framework. I'm not even sure people are paying attention to a framework at this point.
Well,
so
I think
spinning.
Biden, I think Biden should be on board because this will be a victory. No matter how small it is, it'll be a victory.
In the end, he can advertise and say, I brought everybody together. We did something,
and
even if it's brick and mortar only.
And you have Joe Manchin.
That was what I had in mind from the beginning.
Right. Yeah, because he said that he was willing to work.
Yeah, he put put everything but the kitchen sink in, and he said, but I'm willing to compromise.
Yeah, so they probably use alternative ways. Terry, maybe. Well,
but don't you think, to your other point, that Mitch McConnell is going to step in and not allow that to happen because he might see it as a victory? He doesn't want to give Biden that favor.
Well, also, he's getting a telephone call from you-know-who.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Judy Patrick, and Vera Carius-Kelly. We'll be right back after this. We're on the air, folks. Hi, good morning. Welcome. How are you all?
What again?
Don't break out into individual discussion groups, or I'll turn this car right around. Good morning. Welcome. We have Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Judy Patrick, and Vera Acarius-Kelly. We welcome you all to the program. All right. We have a couple letters on the subject of infrastructure. The plan, as I understand it, says Daisy, is to pass this bipartisan bill and then to pass a reconciliation bill to get the progressives on board. This will not pass with progressives if they don't do reconciliation, straight from Bernie Sanders' mouth.
Well, Bernie Sanders, that's President Bernie Sanders, would know about all of his predictions coming true. No, I don't. I think that it will, if the president wants it, it'll happen. There are progressives who are making noises right now, but I believe that's what it is, noises. They're not going to stand in the way of an infrastructure bill, which will build bridges and other things that people really want.
But there might be some other demands that they make, you know, for additional reconciliation efforts or something else to help with human infrastructure projects. You know, I don't have to go into details of what they're looking for. And, you know, environmental issues.
To which I say maybe.
I don't know. I think this is going to be a fight, not only with the Republicans, but with the Democrats as well. I just don't see it being quite this easy. I think that there is an abundance of progressive Democrats in elected positions now in D.C. that are just not willing to back down and let Mitch McConnell run the show. And I think this whole idea of bipartisanship, to me at least, is becoming really problematic. It seems as if Joe Biden wants to live back in the 1990s and sort of take us back to a time where that was the way that his type of senator worked and his type of president worked. But we're just not there anymore. The world isn't like that anymore. We really have to, I think, to stand up to those that want to drag this country down and fight for what we really need to move the country forward.
Of course, I was never a Democratic state senator, so I would defer to you in terms of what you're thinking. But I do want to say that this is a potential for a win on the president's part. And I think in the end, you pick up, I worked for a congressman once and he hated LBJ, hated him. And I came into the office and there he was talking to LBJ on the phone, being very deferential. And I said, how can you do that? And he said, well, when the president of the United States calls you, you take the call and you sort of acknowledge it. So that while they may be making noises now, Terry, I do think in the end, they're not going to stand in the way of a victory for the president of the United States. And this will be a victory.
And you got to remember that every Republican senator has crumbling bridges, poor broadband in their home states. I mean, they'd love to take home some projects that will improve the lives of their constituents. If there's any place for bipartisanship, it's got to be infrastructure.
I still don't know if it's going to happen, by the way. You know, these five sort of semi-reasonable Republicans, best I can do, who've been up front before. If scowling Mitch is going to be, saying no, no, no to all of them under pain of Trump, kicking you out of office, I have a feeling that this is not a done deal yet.
But to Judy's point, if infrastructure is so important to Republicans, and yes, it ought to be, why didn't they pass a bill like this when they had control of both houses and the presidency
and
for four years?
And the president
why
was
didn't they do it?
And the president was talking about the need for infrastructure.
So we never had any leadership.
Why now?
Because Donald Trump was president, and he actually couldn't get anything legislatively done because he is incompetent in the ways of the legislative process.
We were always waiting for the infrastructure package. We were waiting for the health care package.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, wow.
It's going to come tomorrow, and then that was 4 years.
But it's not the president. It's not necessary. The president's job is not to run the legislative branch of our government. The House and the Senate are perfectly capable of coming up with bills and passing them and bringing them to the president to sign. I mean, that has happened in our history. It's not always up to the president to get it done. So I just don't. There's nobody that is disgusted by Donald Trump more than me. I refuse to lay the entire blame on him that there was an infrastructure bill passed. I think that there was lots and lots of people within the Republican Party that resisted it.
We don't even know whether he wanted it or not. He talked infrastructure.
It was 4 years of confusion.
Yeah.
And also, I have to say, Trump had a lot of sycophants appointed, and should we call it third-rate leaders at some point, they dropped out and they sort of were underqualified to actually carry out systematic assessments and develop plans that could be pushed forward. So I think that was part of the problem, right? Big talk, but no sort of ability to push it through the process or even imagine and think about alternative ways to go forward.
Well, it does cost, it costs money, and many of these conservative Republicans that are in elected office now just don't want to spend any money, and I think that was part of it for those 4 years, is that if it costs money, we're going to say no to it.
All right. Anybody else on that? Okay. We'll move on. We go to Michael, who says, aren't spending bills not eligible for the filibuster?
The answer is that fiscal bills are outside the framework, of the filibuster. Nevertheless, you still need to get over. You still need the mansion. You still need the Sirsman, all the other people. So by no means is this a done deal.
We still have a long way to go.
We certainly do.
All right, let's move on to other topics before we go to a break. And one of the, let's do a short story here, something that I don't think will take a whole lot of time. I was fascinated by the story because I knew nothing about it, and maybe you are all, I'm sure you are all much smarter on this issue than I was.
Impossible.
This John McAfee story is knew.
That was a weird story.
I knew that. I had the McAfee security on my computer, and I just assumed that was somebody's name, and I didn't assume that they were criminals. I didn't know that part of it, did I know that they were rotting in prison in Spain.
But he doesn't own it anymore.
No, he had sold it to Intel a long, long time ago, but weirdly, they didn't really change the name until much later when the crimes started to emerge. John McAfee, who is a British-American software entrepreneur who sold his namesake antivirus company in the 1990s and embarked on a globetrotting life of bizarre and often allegedly criminal pursuits while embracing the persona of a gun-toting rogue and outlaw, was found dead in his prison cell near Barcelona on June 23rd. He was 75 years old.
Barcelona.
His lawyer confirmed the death but said he did not know the cause in a statement that did not mention Mr. McAfee by name. The Catalan Justice Department said that an inmate had been found dead in his cell and said that security personnel had been unable to revive him. It appeared to be a suicide, but not confirmed. Hours before his death, a Spanish court issued a preliminary ruling authorizing his extradition to the United States.
On tax evasion.
For tax evasion charges. He had been arrested in Spain in October of 2020, and from my understanding, went through at least 5 years without filing federal income tax. So,
He said he didn't believe in income taxes.
Correct.
NPR had a pretty good interview with him as well.
In the 1980s, as personal computers became mainstream and malware started to emerge, Mr. McAfee, then a successful engineer in Silicon Valley, devised a way to block the brain virus, considered to be the first virus to target IBM PCs. And then went on, and this became a Fortune 100 company. He was making $5 million a year. He sold the company for reportedly $100 million and was a self-proclaimed lover of women, adventure, and mystery.
And not paying taxes.
Well, the main aspect I thought was when I was really starting to get nervous is with the whole Belize thing where he was accused of murdering his neighbor. And I was thinking, now we really are deteriorating.
The neighbor came up missing, right? And they were trying to... and there was dog poisoning. It was
poisoning,
a very strange
story.
It was
very strange too, you know, I mean, clearly not getting on with his neighbor, then running away to Central America, hiding. And, I mean, the man sounded like a really unusual character.
Yeah, unusual. We're not allowed to say crazy or any of that stuff on the
radio.
I'm
not saying that.
No, I know.
I'm saying
I'm
unusual.
Just explaining that
he had.
You can say
know,
unusual. It means crazy in this case.
No, it just means he was very talented and smart. Clearly, as a software engineer,
not smart
and something
enough, not smart enough not to be in prison for a long
well,
time.
Well, you know, he did seem to sneak through a bunch of times.
So there's this neighbor.
Oh God, what a horrible story!
And then who became concerned that the guy's dogs were biting and menacing people, and repeatedly complained to their owner to no avail. When four of the canines were found poisoned, Mr. McAfee reportedly raged that this guy, the neighbor, was to blame, and 2 days later, the neighbor was found shot to death in his home.
So the moral of the story is $100 million can't buy him love, can't buy you a good life, is sometimes dangerous if you're a wacky guy.
Wacky, that's another good word. Yeah. Wacky is also good.
Also, don't kill your neighbor's dogs.
You know, it's just not kind. Just be nice to your neighbor. Get along. Yeah. I think that's actually,
that's
you know,
moral.
The best advice you can give, right?
Rand
you
Paul.
Never know. Right. Oh, yes, it does remind one of Rand Paul. There were issues there, and I thought, I had the same thought. I read this story, and I'm like, Rand Paul comes to mind.
Yeah.
But then, you know, not
they
quite.
They sent that guy to
level.
Prison. The more I found out about Rand Paul, the more I thought that the guy should have been found not guilty, the neighbor.
He often wanted to be identified as an eccentric millionaire.
I think he achieved that goal.
And in a 2013 YouTube video that he made, he showed people how to uninstall McAfee software, a program that he claimed to have grown to detest, claiming that his successors had ruined his baby. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll have more to discuss. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. So we got this letter from Maureen. Wasn't the reason there was no infrastructure bill under 45 is that he wouldn't sign unless the Democrats stopped investigating him? I guess that was probably the reason, but I don't know the stated reason. I don't know if it was the reason. All right. Let's go to other stories. Just so you know, by the way, Alan Chartok is here, Vera Carius Kelly, Terry Gibson, Judy Patrick, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. So I find this an interesting article because this is something that the New York Times did a news analysis on, and I would like to talk about it because we can kind of mush a bunch of different stories into one, and that is under the umbrella of crime. Staving off GOP attacks, Democrats show that they have new urgency on crime. A strong showing by Eric Adams in the New York mayoral race and President Biden's announcement of a new crime-fighting agenda signal a shift by Democrats toward themes of public safety. So immediately, before we get into the issue as a whole, is the New York Times reading too much into the victory of Eric Adams on that sole subject?
Yes.
I think the New York Times was listening to me because for the last couple of days I've been talking about how Adams is going to win. And he was
I think you're mentioned in the article, actually.
He's going to win on them. That'll be the day. And, and he was doing it on the basis of he was going to win on the basis of the change in the public sentiment on this thing.
But that's in New York City. So is that global?
It's global.
Yeah. Terry.
I do think the New York Times is jumping the gun, and I do wish that they would let the process unfold so we can actually find out who really won the race. Looks like he might have won, but it's not for sure yet.
Yeah, but he still got the most votes.
And I'm not sure that what happens in New York City is reflective of what's happening in the rest of the country. In fact, I feel certain that it's
really?
Not.
So you really think that people's personal safety and crime isn't the number one thing on their agenda, on their political agenda?
I mean, I don't have numbers.
I don't have data to back it up. Either,
I don't have data right now, but I can tell you that the rise in this very city that we sit right now has seen
a major increase.
Yes, but not everyone lives in a city, and cities tend to be very democratic. And I'm just not sure that a city as densely populated as New York City is going to be relatable to people that live in much, much smaller cities across the country.
You mean the ones with all the guns? Those small cities with all the guns?
I think this is a very delicate issue for the Democratic Party because they're trying to do two things. They're trying to reduce the amount of guns on the streets. They're trying to fight against crime, but they're also trying to reduce the mass incarceration system that we have here in this country.
So let me just read. I want to get to all of your thoughts here. Let me just read the start of this article from the New York Times. Facing a surge in shootings and homicides and persistent Republican attacks on liberal criminal justice policies, Democrats from the White House to Brooklyn Borough Hall are rallying with sudden confidence around a politically potent cause: funding the police. In the nation's capital on Wednesday, President Biden put the weight of his office behind a crime-fighting agenda, unveiling a national strategy that includes cracking down on illegal gun sales and encouraging cities to use hundreds of billions of dollars in pandemic relief money for law enforcement purposes. His speech represented the most muscular response so far from his administration to a rise in crime that has stricken the country's major cities. In New York City, the country's largest metropolis and a Democratic stronghold, it was Eric Adams, a former police officer who is black, who wrote an anti-crime message to a commanding lead in the initial round of the Democratic mayoral primary on Tuesday. Vera, what say you?
So I wanted to mention a parallel here to the Albany situation. You know, as I mentioned before, I work right down the street here in West Hill all summer long. Just last week, we met with a group called 518 Snug, the anti-violence unit, right? It's a nonprofit organization sponsored by Trinity Alliance. So it is an organization where former federal convicts rehabilitated work on mediation and intervention outside of the police framework. And they're basically up and down Clinton Avenue from West Hill all the way into the South End. And so we had this very interesting, my student group that works at the Refugee Welcome Center over here had a very interesting meeting with 518 Snug. And we talked about the underlying causes for violence uptick and what they do to basically interact with youth, prevention of youth engagement in violent activities. And they also are present to mediate in fights and also when shootings do take place.
Okay, your point?
The point is, we hear over and over again in Albany among African-American community members, white community members from the city, that they want police presence, but in a sense, link police presence to networks of nonprofits and alternative ways through which you bring down crime. So the Democrats have a dual message, and I think it's a very effective message. And the same message works in New York City, which is you have a police presence and deal with violent crime, but at the same time, you have to spend money on prevention, youth engagement, getting weapons off the street, mediation teams, because violent crime is directly related to public health issues.
Okay. On the other hand, Eric Adams becomes by a massive amount, gets the most votes. He doesn't win it. He gets the most votes before this transference occurs. He's the ex-police captain. There is no question that there was a law and order element to that choice and why it happened. And that while you're probably right, Vera, that there are small groups of and very well-meaning, wonderful people who want to do it a different way, people's number one protective device, and the reason they vote that way is because they want safety, personal safety.
Yeah, and they want money for local police unit, not for federal operations, and certainly not for vehicles with rams in front. Like, you go to Woodstock, where I haven't run into, you know, a violent situation, and all the police vehicles seem to have ramming. What do you call those
Woodstock,
things?
Woodstock, New York?
Yeah, you should go. I mean, you're like, what are they doing?
That must be
our
song.
You're going to need to ram another car, especially in Woodstock.
I was just
really?
Like, what is
some
going on
some hippie
man there?
Coming down the road.
Bet it's made out of rubber.
It's
and you remember,
a
and you remember when the state gave them.
I don't know, but you know when
and you remember when the state gave them all that money for all the extra tanks
and
stuff like that.
I think they spent money on stuff like that rather than investing in things that really directly help.
But don't we have to also keep in mind what if the last year has taught us nothing, that we also have to be concerned of the overreach by our police departments in urban areas.
And who they hire and what they're
and how they're trained and how they go forward and what their policies are.
However, a couple of months ago, this was the number one thing on everybody's mind, or most people's minds. We've got to change the police. We've got to change the police culture and do that. All of a sudden, that seems to be mitigated, and we do seem...
No,
Vera, be honest about this. You have some wonderful students with you. You have met on a, you know, with some people out there. But I'm talking a Catholic small c, view of people wanting safety and knowing that the place you go is to the cops.
It depends where you live. So I think it really makes a difference to think about the Democrats will, that's why I'm speaking about a dual approach. They will continue to talk about police reform. They will continue to speak on training, hiring practices, bias issues. All these concerns remain fully active. At the same time, they will also try to take over the sort of law and order talk that the Republicans are trying to set themselves up for. And they will speak to the fact that, no, it's not about defunding the police. It's about reallocation. We have to have safety and security. At the same time, we have to think of public health and safety concerns in a broader way. Just like infrastructure. Infrastructure is not just about roads and buildings and bridges. It's about the police reform package is about integrating a wider variety of issues into creating safe neighborhoods. And that in part involves the police and in part creates the presence, you know, the issue of having a trusted police department, but at the same time it will address other issues. So the Republicans are trying to the Democrats are trying to create a broader umbrella here for the conversation.
Judy?
Well, I think the administration's doing a good job of reframing this debate because the Democrats were being dragged down by the defund the police model and the idea of reallocating money to local police departments is a great idea. There was another story in the news today about the increased number of law enforcement officers, so they're leaving the profession. So I think attention has to be paid to this. I haven't seen any polling on it, but I know that safety is an issue that resonates with most voters. I think it has a lot more traction for Democrats at this point than even the voter effort.
Terry, I can give you a minute, or you can wait till after the break.
Oh, I do think Judy is right that Biden is doing a good job of reframing that message, but I want to talk more about this idea that all he's doing right now is doing what he can through executive orders. If we really do want to get serious about reinvesting in education, dealing with the homeless issue, trying to make our streets safer by getting guns off the streets, that can't be done by executive order only. It's going to have Congress help him, which brings us back to where we were before about whether Congress has the ability to actually get these things done.
He can't and they won't.
All right. We have a lot of letters on this. We will address those and discuss this topic more when we come back. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Judy Patrick, and Vera Carias-Kelly. We will return right after this. Do you want to know what we were doing while the music was playing? Do you really want to know what we were doing? Yeah, we were looking at ourselves on the live studio cam. That's what we were doing.
How do you get that, Joe?
You go to WAMC.org and and there is a option there to go to live studio cam. And it will bring you, and you go on it, and there it is.
And it's the world's worst camera.
Although that's not. It brings everybody in, and it's of an interesting. I think so. This is. That's the camera, right there.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So if you want to check us out as we do this.
I hope we don't crash the website with everybody coming out.
Yeah, I know. That's true. It's a real
it's thing.
I hope we get more than three people who do it.
You know, this is interesting.
What, you discover something?
All right. Well, okay, I know this is radio, and I really apologize for this. Okay, so there's Joe, right?
Uh-huh.
There's Alan.
Mm-hmm.
There's Terry. There's Judy. There's Vera.
Yeah.
And then who's that?
There's a ghost. Oh, my God.
Is that like me twice?
It may be.
That's very weird.
Yes, it is you twice.
All right.
That's okay.
I think it's circles. I think that's how it does it.
Yeah. It's like a ramble effect. Panoramic.
You're twin.
I think you have four arms.
It's panoramic.
Yes, because God knows. Gee, thank you, cameraman. Make me bigger. all right. Let's go back to what we were talking about, which is the important stuff. But we do, yes, if you would like to see us, you certainly can on our live webcam. All right. We have letters. Harleen.
Don't bother.
What?
Don't bother.
We have it for a reason, whatever that may be. Harleen says, Trump unleashed lawlessness by his rhetoric. First, it was by people on the right bringing guns into state and storming the Capitol. In addition, with all the abuse by the rich, it's no wonder the poor are out to get what they can. That from Harleen. We go to Emily.
Wait, I don't get what that means. That means stealing okay? Or what does that mean? Get what they can.
I think they mean what, as far as legislative money is appropriated, I think is what they mean, but I'm not positive. This is subject headed Woodstock police vehicles.
Oh,
so get ready.
I knew I was going to get in
Vera,
trouble.
Let Vera know that the Woodstock cops have collisions with deer a lot.
Oh,
the
okay.
quote-unquote cow catchers are safety for the car occupants. They help the deer from going through the windshield.
Okay. That makes sense. I wished I had one too then, because I'm regularly in the area.
Yep.
The only other comment I have is interesting that some towns have them and other towns in the same area do not.
Well,
so
there the
must be
Christopher
allocation
writes
issues.
To us and says, in Australia, it's called a rhubar.
Rhubar, that makes sense. That makes sense. Okay.
Kangaroo and roo. Yep.
They are mounted on massive trucks that go through the outback and are for destroying a 5-foot kangaroo that jumps out in the road.
Yeah.
Clearly needed in Woodstock, they say. Okay. we go.
Well, that may be closer to the truth than you think.
Well, the deer thing, certainly. But I'm with Vera on this. I want one on my car. Vera referred to this. It's also pushing disabled vehicles while doing minimum damage. By the way, we've talked about infrastructure.
Yeah.
We've talked about crime.
Yep.
Now we're on cow catchers.
And that apparently is the most interesting topic, which I'm always learning a lot, actually. Thank you, everyone.
Joe and I have this discussion every day as to what we have said that will get the mail.
And
it usually isn't the big topic.
No.
It's usually if you're wearing some kind of piece of plastic on your hand, it might pick up the bug.
I was just in Vermont, and I'm thinking people in Vermont and Maine might want to have these things because, you know, you have moose.
The cow catchers, yeah.
Bear. And all over the Berkshires now, we see fox everywhere.
Well, you don't need a cow.
And they just walk through the land as if it deserves. If they
go right underneath the car.
And it is in daylight.
Yeah.
These are not nighttime.
Right in front of God and everybody.
just like they were, like, you know, animals.
Regular citizens,
right.
You
know.
Yeah.
Crazy like a fox. Vera, also used for pushing disabled vehicles while doing minimum damage to both vehicles. Please avoid jumping to negative conclusions.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, we won't.
I mean, I find them intimidating, I must say.
It has become evident that these tried and failed reactionary tough-on-crime policies are having a resurgence because they are being cleverly repackaged as anti-gun violence initiatives to appeal to credulous liberals. Don't fall for it. We have not yet, try it again, we not yet have enough data to challenge the assertion that increased police funding meaningfully reduces crime. Have municipal law enforcement budgets not been steadily increasing independent of crime statistics? Question mark.
One of the things I was really glad to hear yesterday from Biden was the idea that they're going to study gun statistics. You know, it's one of the things that Republicans have long squashed.
Yeah, they didn't like that.
Yeah, and so we're finally going to get some real research into this, and so we can start talking about this topic from a basis of facts.
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine saying, we don't want to even have you study how many guns are used and where they're used and what they're done?
Well, that's
unbelievable.
It is.
Right. But the number of mass killings we've had with assault rifles and assault weapons over the last decade is more than enough data, I think, to convince anyone who's serious about gun safety. So I'm not sure how much more statistics you can really put in front of a Republicans that are resisting
it. Doesn't make any difference
to
the data.
But, yeah, it is good to have the data,
right?
and I'm glad
No, but I mean,
it.
Like, the outcome is the same. Apparently, we can study it. We can collect data. We can also say that, you know, ramming bars are used to push vehicles out of the way that are, you know... We can also say that police cars ram cars while driving when somebody tries to escape, for example. We can position it in any way we want, and then sort of frame it in a more positive way if we'd like to, or we can consider what all the options are for which money is used related to police vehicles.
You could also just say that the reason that Congress has not banned assault rifles is not because they're missing data on how guns are used. Mm-hmm. That's not the reason. This is not
It's interesting because according to NPR this morning, crime in America is basically down.
Mm-hmm.
Stead or down,
right?
And yes, and homicides are up,
right?
And that's all that's up, which is fascinating. I mean, and people draw the conclusion, of course, well, if there are guns, people are going to die from them.
I think it's also important to point out in this whole discussion about what Biden said in relationship to crime is that at the same time, I think it's important because he is trying to reframe the message, he is making an aggressive effort to try to reduce recidivism into prisons, and he's trying to implement through executive order, a variety of different work development programs, job development programs for people that are recently released.
Right.
And so he is trying, as the leader of the Democratic Party, to address many of the things that were part of the defund the police message. It is a very difficult line to walk, though, and without more help from Congress, I'm not quite sure how he does it.
John writes, I find it very interesting that the rise in crime has spiked since George Floyd's murder and the subsequent calls for reining in the police. It is almost as if the police decided to stop doing their job until things got bad enough that they would get carte blanche again. I smell a rat. Can you spell extortion, boys and girls? I knew you could. That from John.
And we do have stories like that from particular locations, actually, right? We know that we have pullback in some areas that were reported, right? I mean, we saw that in the media from a couple of big cities, actually. But it is, I mean, I'm not going to say it is an incredibly difficult job to be a police officer. I recognize that.
It sure
is. It's often very dangerous. And there are ways to which things need to be reformed and looked at systematically. And that is an issue that needs to be on the table just as much as all the other questions that we're discussing.
Elias writes, Democrats make the mistake of thinking Trump is the big problem. The Republican Senate refused to even look at the Obama $500 billion infrastructure bill that was praised by most Republican governors. Trump is the inevitable creation and outcome of decades of Republican Party policy and lies. He is just McConnell 2.0.
Well, I suspect McConnell may be more of a follower of Trump than the other way around. I think McConnell understands that with, I forget what his approval rating was, but it was very, very low, like 13% or 14%. He's got to know that he's got to do what Trump basically wants him to, or he's out. And I suspect that's what it's about.
I was just looking at that, trying to find out what his... Yeah, he has, as of May, he has a 20... It's down 10 points.
Are we talking about Mitch McConnell? Or?
Mitch McConnell's overall favorability rating.
It's now 20? You say it's 20?
I think it's 20%. It was down... So I'm trying to find if the 10% is included in that, and trying to do it quickly. It's 19%.
But that's a national rating, right?
Yeah, it's a national rating, and he has about a 58% unfavorable rating. That is nationally. That
too
is
bad,
not
it's
just
not
the
Kentucky
state of
rating.
Kentucky, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. We'll go on to other stuff here this morning at 18 minutes past the hour, and find out what we want to find out what's on your mind in other issues. All you have to do is write to us, panel at wamc.org, panel at wamc.org.
You better hurry.
Yeah, well, we got about a half hour left. All right, there is a report out in Michigan on voting, and Republicans put this together. Republicans put this, let's put it this way, a majority of Republicans were on the committee that put this report out. And it has debunked voter fraud claims in an unsparing report. This from the New York Times. A committee led by Michigan Republicans on Wednesday published an extraordinary debunking of voter fraud claims in the state, delivering a comprehensive rebuke to a litany of accusations about improprieties in the 2020 election and its aftermath. The 55-page report, produced by Michigan State Senate Committee of three Republicans and one Democrat, is a systematic rebuttal to an array of false claims about the election from supporters of President Donald Trump. The authors focus overwhelmingly on the state of Michigan, but they also expose lies perpetuated about the vote counting process in the state of Georgia. The report is unsparing in its criticism of those who have promoted false theories about the election. It debunks claims from allies like Mike Lindell, the chief executive of MyPillow. I can't believe I'm saying that. Rudolph Giuliani, the president, former president's lawyer, and Mr. Trump himself. Yet while the report eviscerates claims about election fraud, its authors also use the allegations to urge their legislative colleagues to change Michigan's voting laws to make absentee voting harder and limit the availability of drop boxes for absentee ballots, as Republicans have done in other swing states as they try to limit voting.
Yeah, that was a really interesting story, and it is similar to the strategy we're seeing across the country in other Republican-led legislatures, where they are saying, well, yes, Joe Biden is the rightful president and there was no real sign of election fraud, but we still should do everything we can to try to make sure that elections are safe. So therefore, we see justification in making sure that we pass new laws to make it harder for Democrats to vote. Because they are all seeing the same thing, that the country is becoming more and more Democratic, states are becoming more Democratic. And so at the end of the day, if they want to stay in power, they're going to have to find a way to keep Democrats from voting. That's what's happening.
But wackiness is still raging, isn't it? In Michigan, you still have these people who are only getting part of the message. The big part of the message, I thought, was that the election was fine. There were no problems at the election. But outside the state house, you have people who obviously didn't read the report who are clamoring for huge changes and do not believe that Joe Biden was fairly elected president.
Right.
How do you tamp that down?
And a 55-page report is not going to be read by 99.99% of the people who should be reading it.
That's true.
They might read one paragraph.
Alan, you want in?
No.
Okay. Next up, we go to this letter. Just checking. I wanted to go to this letters from Leonard, who says New York City has the largest police force in the country, and the spike in crime we have seen over the last few months have occurred despite the huge police presence and expenditure of $6 billion a year. The hard truth is that police don't curb crime and, for the most part, only show up after crimes are committed. We live in a violent society riddled by poverty, trauma, widespread racism, poor education, corruption and widespread public ignorance about the causes of violence, not to mention the prevalence of gun violence. Police militarization and infiltration by white supremacists is a major problem, and more police will not address violence or reduce crime.
That's a good letter.
Yep, I'd say. Print it out.
Then Tom says, before we chuckle about rambling red foxes and black bears encroaching on our space.
I'm chuckling over here.
Not encroaching on our space. We are encroaching on theirs, right?
Please remember that the wildlife was here first. You have predicted it, Vera. It is analogous to Europeans invading indigenous people's lands and expecting them to move aside or disappear. What we see as a forest is what foxes and black bears call their home.
And I love them. I love nature, and I embrace all animal life. I love them.
Yes. All right. I just want
to say they're eating my roses, and I'm not happy about it.
I know.
Who's
there?
The deer. Yeah. Well,
I got news for you. The tomato plants, the first time. I've never seen deer eat tomato buds before.
I thought they were tomato. Well,
how do you know it was a deer? It might have been a fox.
You are so right. A fox eating your tomato plants?
I mean, you need to get out more, Terry.
It would be over their heads.
But I think you're all forgetting. The foxes were here first.
That's their home. They didn't plant no roses, just
That's
saying.
Right. Michael says there was a great analysis on the rise in crime by the United States. United States of Anxiety that statistically showed how crime was at an all-time low and has risen, yet it is still way below the crime level from only several years ago. I'm afraid that this distortion will give the police more power when we need to continue to reallocate our resources.
I think there are an awful lot of people who have great respect for police agencies, but they want honest police agencies. They don't want corrupt police agencies. They don't want people who are ripping it off. For the police, in terms of the recruitment that they're having right now, and I've just read an account where there's some real problems, ever since Chauvin got convicted, there is a sense of people who say, well, I can't afford to be a policeman now because I can't do what I want. This is not a Shartakian endorsement of police brutality. It's just to tell you that there has to be a real wide-ranging ethical look at how police behave.
I just think Joe Biden's got to be so careful because he is directly associated with the crime bill that Bill Clinton pushed and did so much damage in terms of increasing the amount of people being put into our prisons. And Biden was right there with it. And he has to be really careful not to go back and relive that whole thing again.
You think people can't change their minds?
No, I do think people can change their minds. But I think that the way people perceive Biden, I think many progressive Democrats on the left that perceive Biden, they still perceive him as being this person that's sort of stuck in the 90s that's going to govern the way Bill Clinton governed and that is going to be doing things regarding crime fighting in the same way that Bill Clinton did it, which is not going to be acceptable to them.
Well, I don't know. You know, Bill Clinton got reelected, right? Even when he was in terrible trouble.
It's true.
He was one of them, even with impeachment, he was one of the most popular, at least one of the most popular presidents in history. Not from me, by the way, but.
Right. But I mean, times have changed. And I think his wife paid the price for Bill Clinton's, crime bill as well.
Well, that certainly is a possibility. There's also a possibility that she paid the price for being Hillary.
Well, that too. I think it's a combination of factors.
A woman.
Yeah, for being
well,
a woman.
Well, no, you're quite right, Judy.
Being,
this will be framed by some as she lost because she was a woman. And you're right to mention that. On the other hand, she stands on her own too. We wouldn't want to be putting her down and saying that nothing she does means anything.
Can I make the point that if we're watching police account, we want to keep police accountable. Look local. Pick up your local newspaper or go to your local radio station and watch and see what your local police department is doing and how they're spending their money. Because this is such a big issue, you tend to your eyes tend to glaze over. I say pay attention to your village, your town, your county, your state police agencies and see what they're doing.
I'm watching it, but I don't understand it.
You should go and talk to them.
I have lots of questions.
Yeah.
We have this from Jane, who says, John's email was absolutely true. The police are intentionally doing less to assist with crime issues to punish people, liberals, for their position on criminal justice. I live in New York City, and a couple of months ago, we had over 200 teenagers on dirt bikes take over the courtyard of my building. The police in 9/11 ignored dozens of calls for over 2 hours. When I finally flashed a police car down, the officer told me in a very punishing way that they are giving us what we voted in, less police. Ooh. He smirked and drove away. Oh, man. I wish you had that on video.
Wow, that's rough. Yeah, no. I mean, one of the other big issues, I think, in cities, small and large, is the fact that many police contracts allow for you to live outside of the area you police, and I think that's a terrible mistake. You should work within the area, within a certain distance of where you actually work, so you understand your neighborhood and consider it your neighborhood and treat people as your neighbors.
And as you know, all cops carry guns. So
do many other people's.
Well, no,
a lot of people carry guns these days now.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, we got this from Ricky, who says, God bless the Michigan state election officials for pushing back against the false conspiracy of a stolen election. As important a matter of Republicans trying to suppress voting in some states and regions, not all of their proposed election rule changes necessarily make voting harder for Democrats more than Republicans. And some of them seem to try and roll back the relaxing of restrictions on voting to compensate for the now waning COVID pandemic. I find the total condemnation of Republican voting law changes should be slightly more nuanced.
That's true. I think as we sit here in New York, we can't vote on Sunday in New York. We can't register to vote day as Election Day. I mean, well, people in New York look at some of these proposed, you know, reductions in other states. We're thinking, wow, they make voting a lot easier than it is here in New York. And there's no discussion here in New York about changing things, really.
Correct. And also, it can be much more difficult if you live in the countryside in a rural community. You can't get to a voting poll.
They keep changing the voting.
Changing.
Yeah.
So these are really serious issues, and they affect elderly voters.
For good reason.
15 seconds.
There's a lot of Democrats got here under the old rules, not any progressive rules.
But good letter.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will be back for our final go-round with our group right after this short break. Times are changing, and what? I'm sorry. What did we miss?
I think Vera got caught.
Okay.
No,
all
I
right.
Didn't.
Okay. All right. Everything all right?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. See, I had my headphones on, so I didn't hear what you said, but that's okay.
The question is, we can't say anything. What we've all learned here at WAMC over the years.
Of us better than others.
Never say anything in front of a microphone.
Yeah, I have a button over here, but I have to hear the infraction.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. It didn't rise. It didn't rise to that.
Okay.
You have an eject button?
No, it's just a dumb button. So if so, we have 7 seconds to make up for any things that happen. What was it? Oh. Britney Spears. Let's talk about Britney Spears. I never thought I would say that, but let's talk about Britney Spears. Told a Los Angeles judge on Wednesday that she has been drugged, compelled to work against her will, and prevented from removing her birth control device over the last 13 years of her life as she pleaded with the court to end her father's legal control of her life. This story is fascinating to me on multiple levels, and I will point out I'm sure there is at least one or two people out there who say, why are you doing Entertainment Tonight stories on my public radio station? But I think the story is important, as evidenced by the fact that it is on the front page of every newspaper and let's say, major publication in the country, because it does bring us to why is a 39-year-old, am I right on that?
I think you're right.
She's 39 years old. Having all of her, basically her life, directed by that of her 68-year-old father. She said to the court yesterday, I've been in denial. I've been in shock. I am traumatized. She made a 23-minute address by phone that was broadcast in the courtroom. And as she insisted to the public, I just want my life back. It was the first time that the world had heard Ms. Spears address in detail her struggles with the conservatorship granted to her father, James Spears, in 2008, when concerns about her mental health and potential substance abuse led him to petition the court for legal authority over his adult daughter. Ms. Spears called for the argument to end without her having to be evaluated. I shouldn't be in a conservatorship if I can work. The laws need to change, she added. I truly believe this is conservatorship. Try it again. I truly believe that this conservatorship is abusive. I don't feel like I can live in a full life. The struggle between one of the world's biggest pop stars and her father has become a long-running saga that has spawned a Free Britney movement around the world among her fans and fellow celebrities. The striking development came after Ms. Spears' court-appointed lawyer asked at her request in April that she be allowed on an expedited basis to address the judge directly.
She apparently has been asking to address the judge for a long time, for years, and for a long time she didn't even know she had this this ability. It seems this is very we don't know everything, but if I were her, I wouldn't want to be evaluated either, because she doesn't trust the system, because the system has done her wrong.
So am I right in assuming that she has a court appointed lawyer because the person who is holding the purse strings is not allowing her to get a lawyer, which obviously she, under normal conditions, she would be able to afford?
Well, indeed. And in fact, she had a lawyer that she wanted to represent her. This person was on one of the cable network shows last night, and he tried to represent her, and he was rejected by the judge. So
this whole thing's very frightening.
It is incredibly frightening that typically this happens for people who are very infirm, very not able to think, make decisions for themselves. Not to a young woman who is performing, recording. It seems like her life is not her own. I agree with her in that respect.
Well, she's completely controlled, right? From what we know, she doesn't get to select her own therapist. She doesn't get to make her own appointment or decide when she has a therapy session. She doesn't have any input over what medication is given to her. It seems the entire system around her is arranged so that she is made to be productive in a way that makes money for others.
That's because she's being handled as a product.
Yes.
As opposed to a person. And it is, I think, appropriate for this public radio station because it's a very American story. It's a story about how we time and time again take these child celebrities and we treat them as products instead of people. And our country has a long history of taking child stars like this and really destroying them because we forget that they're actually human beings.
$60 million fortune that she has that is being looked after by her father. And it's also, according to this New York Times article and their reporting, it is a two-pronged conservatorship, which is the case, I guess, in California, covering her person and her estate. And again, came about because of concerns about her mental health and potential substance abuse. I don't want to be flip here, but how it's not exactly rare in Hollywood to have mental health and substance abuse issues, and people are living their lives without being under a conservatorship.
Exactly, exactly right, Joe. I mean, it does seem she's paying a penalty that a lot of people in America who have all kinds of problems don't have to suffer with. It's really nutty, and it does make the father out to be very, very self-interested. And you know what? He's now saying, I love her, and I feel so badly that I can't be
Please.
With her.
I know.
But she's outside the realm of your typical Hollywood star. I mean, she is a superstar. She is a product that generates millions and millions and millions of dollars every year through her previous recordings and her current recordings and her Las Vegas shows. And I remember I used to actually work at MTV in my former life. And I remember that was at the time when she was just becoming this big hit and everybody thought she was going to be a one hit wonder. And she turned out to just keep cranking them out and became, she's still as popular, if not more popular than she ever was.
So what would you do if you were the judge?
Well,
A female judge, by the way, Brenda Penny.
Yeah, I mean, you can't take away agency from an adult woman who seems to be performing well at her job and then determine that she can't have a child.
Well, that's
mean, what is that?
That's the thing, right? If you you're going and you're saying that she is not, this is what I don't understand. And to Judy's point, we obviously there's a lot we don't know here,
yeah,
but
right.
but you look at it and you say, all right, well, if she's well enough to go out and perform and
exactly.
do a major tour mm-hmm. and to make money and record an album, then why is she not fit to oversee her own financials
right.
and
her
the degrees
life,
of her life?
Even
yes.
her private life is completely controlled. So that's what seems yeah. so appalling about this. She has mm-hmm. no agency. She has no ability to express her wishes.
Yep.
She's completely controlled and managed. It's
and her
really
and her dad is taking a certain percentage of as
yeah.
allowed.
Yeah.
I actually think $60 million is low for a singer of her. Popularity. I think she should actually be worth more than $60 million.
Well, wait a second. I'm sure I missed the point here. How much is the father getting? Do you know?
He gets a percentage or two of tours. It's negotiated every time, but he gets a lot of money.
Well, besides the money, he also gets a lot of power.
Power, right? And it's kind of a conflict of interest to say, oh, I'm going to get 1% of this tour. You must go on tour.
Even though yeah. she doesn't want to go on tour.
Even if she says, I'm really exhausted, I need a rest. No, the father and the team that the father controls around her says, no, there must be an extension of the tour because obviously everyone, including the father, but
yeah.
also the employees have a job. They have, a great arrangement. So this needs to be revisited, and this judge will also have to speak to the larger question of how could this be continued for so many years without actually giving her a chance to be revisited.
I think, I forget which one of you brought this up, I think it may have been Judy, but this has been going on for so long.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she has filed for the court in 2016 trying to be removed from this conservatorship. And at that time, an investigator went in and looked and said she's being sick of being taken advantage of. And the investigator, who is ultimately responsible for periodic evaluations that are provided to the judge, concluded that the conservatorship remained, this again in 2016, remained in Ms. Spears' best interest because of her complex finances, susceptibility to undue influence, and intermittent drug issues. But the report also called for a pathway to independence in the eventual termination of the conservatorship.
Can I just say, there are a lot of rock bands who in the past or currently continue to use drugs intermittently, and they don't seem to be in this arrangement. Why her?
Yeah, you have to wonder if she was not a woman. If this was a young man, this is a woman, would this be different? And you have to think that it probably would.
Right.
Because of the way that, our legal system and just our country in general continues to isolate women and treat them differently.
Interest in this really accelerated last year when they had this documentary about mm-hmm. Britney Spears.
Free Britney, yeah.
Free Britney. But can you imagine the outrage among her fans if this conservatorship continues? I think there's going to be a real blowback.
Judy or anybody, has anybody here seen anybody come out for the father in all of this?
Not yet.
No. Well, other than the court in
yeah.
the past, right?
Yeah.
Ms. Spears said that she had been prevented from going to the doctor to remove her IUD method of birth control. She said, quote, this so-called team won't let me go to the doctor to take it out because they don't want me to have children. She added to the court, I want to be able to get married and have a baby. I was told right now in the conservatorship I am not able to get married and have a baby. Again, 39 years old. Earlier, Ms. Spears had declared herself done. All I want is... Oh, do we have to go? I'm sorry. Okay. All I want is to own my money for this to end, and my boyfriend to drive me in his car, she said. So... that is a story. We are very late. I'm sorry I didn't look at the proper timing for this. But I thank you all for being here. We'll end that story.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks, Terry. Thanks, Judy. Thanks, Vera. We'll be back.